Show of Everything, Top 5s, presented by The Sex Effects. I'm Joey Prati.
And I'm Sean Day.
And folks, we are back after a bit of a hiatus. We hope you're doing well. And if not, we hope you get better. Before we get to our evening's program, Seanathan, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right, actually. I've just been kind of spending this last few days and I guess the week, obviously still trying to keep up with a lot of the Black Lives Matters movement, trying to still stay active as far as like signing petitions.
Yes.
And then just also just taking some time just to, you know, kind of reflect by myself and, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in the world right now. But, you know, aside from making music and staying busy, you know, also just been trying to like kind of focus on myself personally and find time out of my days to kind of, you know, reflect and think about, just what's going to happen, you know, what's my path in this next few months or year or whatever, and how it's going to be like with this kind of new way of living in a way with this COVID-19 thing. So, but aside from that, you know, just trying to stay, focused in some way or form, but also, you know, just again, you know, trying to take time to rest just feel at home. So
wonderful.
Joey, how are you feeling this week, man?
Feeling good, man. Feeling productive. Started a new job recently and just been very busy and go, which is a good thing. And, just keeping active. I have a lot of energy lately. It's a good thing. Creative energy, working on a new script, doing, you know, different things. But like you were saying, you know, trying to stay abreast of what's going on in the world, be conscious of all of our actions going forward and just trying to really not let the Black Lives Matter thing become just something that isn't trending this week. You know what I mean? Like, we gotta, it's like, we did Kairos. We got to live the fourth, right? We got to live the fucking fourth. So thank you for kind of saying that. It was well put, my friend. But yeah, man, I'm just living, really. I'm just here. I'm drinking some Mac Drizzle Gold. Mac Dre.
What?
Beer.
Wait, he has his own drink?
Well, I don't know. I picked this up from Gus's Market on Noriega. That's pretty cool. It's got the, that's pretty sweet. That's gold. If you can't tell,
that's
it's
so
24 karat. It's Mac Drizzle Golden Ale. Thizz Ale is what it is. A hop-forward golden ale with notes of melon, gooseberry, passion fruit, and lychee. Everywhere you drink it, it's a party, y'all. Go stupid. And it's brewed and canned by Altamont Beer Works in Livermore.
That's so cool. That's so Bay Area, dude. That's such a, especially Mac Dre being part of the Bay Area kind of, you know, hip hop scene. Like,
yeah,
that's super cool. I actually never realized they made something like that.
I'm not a big fan of fruity beers. This is good, but yeah, I definitely chose it because, you know, you gotta rep.
That's super cool, man.
The yay.
I'm drinking a Newcastle at the moment.
Ooh.
Which I didn't realize they changed their label until just recently. I was like,
that's a bummer. It was classy. It was perfect. It was, you knew that was Newcastle.
Did
they go with a wider bottle? Is that what it looked like? I couldn't.
It looks kind of wider. Yeah.
Yeah, it's stumpier.
And it's brown. Like, I think the original Newcastle bottles had the clear. I can understand the color change because I think it, you know, the light and stuff in it, but yeah, it's kind of weird. It looks like Americanized because I think it is bottled here and looks like Petaluma, California, Chicago, Illinois.
What? Wow.
Brewed and bottled. Yeah. So they must be, you know, they must be operating out here.
So is it a English recipe? Is that because it's, we have always known,
dude,
Newcastle to be a British beer. I'm confused now.
This is probably going to be a rabbit hole I'm going to go down tonight then.
Can I follow you? Can I grab on your tail and join you?
This is how much time I have these days. Just like what I, yeah, what I, what
that's
I
a good rabbit hole. For.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're having a couple brews tonight. Is there, Joey, is there anything, news? I know we kind of
yeah.
took this, you know, hiatus and, you know, I guess we're kind of, just trying to come back. And there was a few things, I guess, that, dropped during this break that we had.
Things have happened out in the pop culture world that are actually worth talking about. Two, we have two deaths that we need to acknowledge. Last Monday, Joel Schumacher, the director of, I'm not going to lead with it, I'm going to say Falling Down, Phone Booth. And yes, he did Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, which were formative. We were six when Batman Forever came out, and Batman and Robin came out in 97, so we would have been like 8 or 9. I was already kind of losing interest at that point. I felt I'd kind of outgrown it as a mature 9-year-old. You know, I'd moved on to Star Wars. But those, especially Forever, was a big, big movie. And, you know, it gets derided a lot for its campiness today. And it's, yeah, it's not a very good movie. But the dude was given a job and he did his job. You know what I mean? Like, he gave WB what they wanted. And he gets, and he's always, I think, handled the criticism of having the modern day equivalent of the worst movie ever made constantly thrown at you, right? He handled it with such grace, and he always seemed like such, and by all accounts was such a nice guy. And he, you know, he went on camera and apologized to the fans. That was, it's in one of the DVD featurettes on Batman and Robin, and he's like, look, I'm sorry to any of the fans that I let down. I never meant to mishandle your character. Well, he goes on like he was a genuine dude, and he seemed like a really cool guy. And the world's going to be a little less awesome without him. Joel Schumacher. And today we lost Carl Reiner.
What? No way.
Yeah. He passed away earlier today. This morning, I think.
Oh, man.
He just posted a picture with Mel Brooks and his daughter wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts like 2 days ago. And then today to hear that he's gone, it's but he's 98.
Yeah. He lived a good life, right? Long,
very, life very good life. Let's turn the corner. Let's have some, God knows we all need just a little bit of fucking levity in our lives. Michael Keaton is in talks to come back as Batman in a Flashpoint movie. Sean, I want to know.
I was
your
waiting
reaction.
For your reaction.
I want. I have words. I have thoughts, but I want to hear yours. I don't want to taint or corrupt your. I think you are going to be excited, and I think you're going to be optimistic, and I don't want to fucking dance on any of that. So I want you to go first. I want to hear what you have to say about this.
Well, I've had a few days to take it in and think about it. And we actually, before we recorded the show, I think a few days ago, we actually talked on Zoom or on the phone, and we briefly touched on this. And
yeah,
you know, now thinking about it, I think it's an interesting play, I would say, to put him in there, especially for. You know, I mean, I'm down to see that, like, yeah, 1989 Batman.
Down to see that, like, right?
That was
like,
my first, like, experience with Batman as far as, like, the movies and stuff. And so, I, you know, it's as far as that play to kind of put him in this, you know, back in there, I'm sure it's going to get a lot of people, you know, from our generation that will probably end up watching it or whatnot. I don't know how DC is going to, like, I feel right now, and I'm sure I had this feeling that I thought they're kind of course correcting a little bit with some of the DC movies and trying to kind of concentrate. Maybe even I know there's a new they're going to have a Batman trilogy, right? With
Matt Reeves and
Matt Reeves and
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought that was the extent of Batman as far as, you know, here's what they're going to do next with Batman and how they're going to kind of move forward. And honestly, I thought all these other characters like Flash, you know, I thought the Flashpoint movie was like Nolan, it was gone. You know, it had like a bunch of directors attached to it and they just all left. And so I thought I almost thought they abandoned that ship.
After the shit thing. I mean, cancel culture, so I don't want to be part of, but like, do you see the video of Ezra Miller like throwing down?
Yeah, I saw that too. And that,
what? And you're gonna move forward with this guy? Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I'm feeling right now. You know, it's I would be interested to see it. You know, I feel like some of those things won't deter me too much to go see it. But at the same time, it's like I'm not invested enough into it because of the bad taste that it left me with a lot of Justice League and Batman versus Superman. And even if they release a Snyder cut or whatnot, I still don't, you know, on my opinion, I don't think it's going to be as good as people think it is. You know, it is cool that we're going to see like the Snyder cut, like his original vision and what it, you know, I think that's cool. And that, you know,
I'll watch it.
Yeah. I just felt like they didn't nail it on the head. So, you know, I thought the direction of where they're going is, why don't we maybe go with some other characters and kind of work with a single movie interconnectivity and stuff. Yeah. And then maybe just, you know, with the success of Joker, maybe it's like, we'll have a chance to get more kind of just standalone DC movies. And like, I'm cool with that. You know, we don't have to be so attached to this world. And there's a lot of DC characters. So like, I'm super down for that. But I honestly thought they were like, this thing was just like, out, you know, and so hearing this news, it was kind of weird hearing it, and it's like, okay, so how are they going to really try to do this? But it is Flashpoint, so I don't know if they're trying to do this whole like multiverse kind of thing, and that's how they're going to try to tie even all of their other titles together. And you know, I think it's a little messy for sure. That's how I feel about it.
It's so messy. And the idea of a multiverse, like, does a general audience give a shit about a multiverse? And if you have a multiverse, that is something you need to build towards, just like a cinematic universe. Like, Spider-Man got away with it, one, because it was animated gorgeously, but it still had Peter Parker, right? Like,
yeah,
you had someone holding your hand through it, and I guess that's what they want Michael Keaton to be. But I'm gonna give you guys a little parable. All right. Thursday night, I ate like a fucking pig. I went to Target and I was like, I'm not usually at the store anymore. So like I'm never at Target. So I kind of went crazy. Like in the snack aisle, I bought the no brand barbecue chips. Just greasy. They didn't have the plain. I would have gotten just sea salt. But they had barbecue. I got barbecue. And I picked up ice cream. Cookie dough brownie, Ben and Jerry's. And
hey.
I did not plan to eat or break into any of this that night. But I got hungry. And chips are my weakness, man. Like I just stood there in the kitchen going, I'm only gonna have like two or three. Before I know it, three quarters of the bag is gone. And it's been 3.5 minutes. And I'm like, what? So I'm like, okay, no more. Go back to the couch. I'm just like, but I'm bored. You know, I just want to eat. But I'm not going to do those chips again. So I went, I got ice cream. You ever eat chocolate anything, let alone ice cream, after pigging out on barbecue chips? I love both those things. Yeah. But you don't want one to follow the other. You don't want them together. So that is how I feel about the... putting Michael Keaton, 1989 Batman, into a Flash movie. What the how does that, how? What?
Yeah.
What? Who?
Still trying to piece it together.
Coked up producer was like, you know what? Like, I want to be in the room with that guy and be like, hey, you know, let me actually give you some good ideas. I feel like well, first postscript to that story, after I ate ice cream, I then went back and killed the bag of potato chips.
Hey,
and I hated myself all day Friday. All day Friday, my stomach was like, you suck. And I was like, I know. At this point, I feel like Michael Keaton is nothing more than product placement in this movie. And that makes me really sad because it's hard to look at, it's hard to really articulate comic book movies when the first two Batman movies came out, the Tim Burton films. Comic book movies, superhero movies didn't really exist. We had had Superman from 77, 78 to 87, I think. And that fourth one, no one went, it was like a B movie. And he was kind of, I feel like, I like Christopher Reeve, Superman. I don't like the Superman movies particularly, but they're, I think they're more in line with Adam West, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of.
Especially the costumes and everything. He's more in line. He fits right in with Adam West and Linda Carter, Wonder Woman. So the Keaton one is the, I mean, you trace all modern superhero movies to this one. You can make a case for The Matrix, but it really starts with Batman 89. And that's why, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. They had no template. They weren't, you know, they didn't give a shit about the fans or what the fans thought or cared about. All that, you know, the fans, because these didn't come around, it was a Batman movie. So they were going to grab it, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're spoiled. And you can say no to it. But back then you couldn't. So that's why you would get characters who resembled nothing like their comic book counterparts. Even Batman. Batman is mm-hmm. nothing like Batman in either of the Burton Batman movies. But he's in the suit. And he kind of fights crime, sort of. And that's really all we need, right? What those movies lacked in comic book accuracy, they were, I hate to sound snobbish, and they were cinema. They were films, right? They were a director's artistic vision, especially Batman Returns. Batman is more the vision of producers than anything else. But Batman Returns is Tim Burton's baby, for better or worse, and worse. Is it a good Batman movie? No. But it's an interesting movie, and it gave Michael Keaton a lot to do. And what are we going to gain from seeing Michael Keaton's Batman in a Flash movie? What I'm telling you right now, what it's going to be. It's going to be a bunch of fan service-y lines, and moments that are just like, yeah, of course they checked that box, right? And I especially don't want to associate Keaton's Batman with that. Keaton's Batman is my favorite on-screen Batman in terms of voice and presence and everything. And every single actor who has played Batman since Keaton owes him something, a shred of something. Like,
yeah.
Every cinematic Batman has its roots in what Michael Keaton did in those first two movies. And to see him come back this way feels very cheap, very CW, very fan servicey. And I'm really bummed out. Like, leave, if you want to build a movie around Keaton's Batman and bring Burton back, yes, I'll check that out. Why not?
Yeah.
I don't like Burton. I think he's kind of hacky, but hey, well, yeah, that at least kind of makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
This, like, how would you feel if they took Christian Bale, but it wasn't Christopher Nolan directing, it was
it's weird. It's like, you know, I'd rather have those movies just stand on their own, and you know, them taking Keaton's Batman and applying it to this world, you know, it's like, wait, you know, we obviously cherish like the original movies, or you know, we see them for what they are, you know, as far as like those first two, but yeah, it, for me, it's just like, I just don't, like, what's the play here? Like, are people going to, you know, are people really going to watch this? Like, You know, I know there's a lot of people still like the Flash TV show, like the CW stuff. And, you know, the interest of the Flash character, I think, is there. You know, like, I think people, you know, the fandom, I guess, behind that character. But as far as, like, you know, I honestly thought, like, even with the is still fans trying to get the Zack Snyder cut, and, you know, it is happening. But, like, you know, it's just like, were there really, like, a lot of other, like, a lot of people who really liked this series of characters, you know, the with the Justice League and everything, you know,
it's
like
a loud like minority.
I think that's where, you know, and that's the shitty part about, like, yeah, hearing this news is like, oh yeah, like, you're taking something, you know, that movie, like, Batman 1989, you know, it's like when we came out, you know, we were, you know, born and shit. So, like,
yeah,
taking that, and it's like really kind of blatantly use it to, you know, possibly get people to come out because of that reason. So,
yeah,
which is, you know, that's the kind of weird, harsh reality sometimes too with I guess the movie business, right? You know, and
these, it just feels bigger. Gross.
Yeah, and that's gross. That's why, like, you know, I the whole, like, superhero fatigue and, like, those kind of bigger studio movies. You know, I have been trying to watch, like, smaller independent films because I am kind of not fatigued, but, like, I am kind of, like, over. Seeing, like, whoa, like, yeah, these movies are big and they're very grand and whatnot, but also they're, you know, they're, you know, the people behind these, you know, the machine behind it, you know, it's still, you know, that's still an issue. Like, there's a lot of control that the movie studios have and not the creative control of the directors and the writers and stuff. So, which is a big thing. And honestly, you know, I think it's going to start to show. I mean, I know there's a lot of people, go out to, like, love to see, like, big blockbusters, and the market, obviously, you know, outside of the United States too, you know, there's a lot of people just want to go see stuff get blown up or just see Batman. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what the story is, but, you know, the fans, you know, I love Batman films, and I love, you know, and Joey, you're a huge Batman fan as well. So, you know, this kind of stuff is, like, it's interesting because, like, it's very similar to, like, I guess, our feelings on. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Steve Rude.
Remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of similar to our discussions on, like, Star Wars and how Disney, you know, is running that train now. And,
yeah. Oh.
You know, it's a totally different thing. And I guess just a takeaway right now is, you know, we could decide to watch them or not and go with that. But, you know, we still have, you know, the original content. We still have those movies. We still have the comics to go to, you know, I think that's what's, I guess, a good freedom, I guess, for, you know, us, watching things, you know, and being subjective about it. Right. You know, it's however we make it feel. At least the original, Indiana Jones trilogy still exists, even though they made that fourth one, but I'm still going to watch, you know, those. I still enjoy those.
Just put your blinders on, pretend it's not there.
Yeah. That kind of thing. So,
yeah,
you know, but I don't know if this movie comes out and it's like, you know, I don't know how they're going to really tie this in. And that's maybe my curiosity with the movie and just like, okay, so how's this going to work? And maybe that's just why I probably may go see it because of that. It's just like, okay, so like, what's, is this going to be like DC's like, okay, we're going to try to like course correct all this stuff right now. And I honestly think it might fail, and I wouldn't mind being there when it happens. But you know, I also want to try to have faith, you know, it's like, hey man, like, you know, there's a lot of good DC stuff that they can come out with as far as movies too. And, you know, and of course they've had, you know, they've had a few good, you know, good ones out there too. So it's like, I think just trying to figure out like, you know, what they really want to do, what their plan is. And you know, the new movie industry is a totally different thing right now because no one's making a lot of movies. No one's making movies right now. So maybe, you know, it'll be interesting to see what will be coming out in the next, you know, few years. And, I'm going to totally hate it if they do more disaster movies, based off of like COVID-19.
It's coming.
Just like they did. I'm not hating on, I mean, I don't want to hate on any of these films because, you know, there is a degree of, you know, why they made them and, you know, to obviously showcase, you know, characters that are fictional to some degree, but, you know, like, for example, the movie about like 9/11, you know, like that,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
honestly came out too early. Like, I just why would you make a movie like that? You know? So
I mean, if there's story potential and it's, God, I hate to say this, but that's I hate to say this, but it's built in, like pre-existing. No, it's like almost this is disgusting. It's almost like having an IP, right? People know that thing. So they're going to go see it.
Yeah. Right?
If it had been about any other building or any other thing, no one's going to go watch that movie because it's 9/11, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I hate to say it so crudely, but that's what it is.
Yeah. And that's why I never, I'm open to kind of, I even feel like I probably watch that movie like eventually, but like just stuff like that. It just shows like, and I'm not saying, of course, make movies. I mean, documentaries. I would rather watch a documentary than something like that. But yeah, I mean, just showing like, okay, there was one person or a few people that had to come together and make that decision to make that movie. You know what I mean? And to say like, people are going to watch this because of that particular reason. So, it's a terrible comparison, but I think, with, Batman, it's kind of the same thing. Like, people, have that attachment and that nostalgia behind Batman 1989. So it's like,
it's built in, audience, built in revenue,
built in audience right there. Yeah. And that's the movie machine, working right there. So yeah. So that like, it sucks because I love movies and of course some of these big movies are awesome. Like they're, they put a lot of work into them and, I'm never dissing anyone and the people behind making these films, but it's just interesting, when you see the kind of the trends and the kind of things that they're doing to, because it is a business, it's like crazy to like think like, yeah, it's for our entertainment, but it's also for people to make money. And like,
it's all about the almighty dollar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even the artsy pictures are only made to get Academy Awards, to get more prestige, to get more money. It's very disheartening. I
feel you.
But I mean, and that's kind of that's kind of the end result of all forms of media or art, right? Is the ultimate goal is to sell this thing and have fame and fortune and what have you. But like, there's nothing pure in the world, kids. This show is pure because we don't charge money for you to listen to it. It's completely free. We do this to stay in touch because I love Sean and Sean loves me, and sometimes that love makes beautiful things. It really does, dude. This is pure. This is pure. If you're out there, dear imaginary audience, thank you. Thank you for joining us. You are pure. Maybe. I don't know you. Maybe. Dirty little nugget. All right, Shawnee, should we get to some lists?
Yeah, let's do it, dude.
Word. Would you like to go first? Would you like me to go first? Or you know what? If I may.
Yeah, okay.
If I may. Because this whole news segment was completely leading to my top five. Time up. Keaton's not the only one, right? Keaton's not the only guy to come back to the role 30 years after playing him, 20 years after playing him. Who else have we seen recently?
Oh, man.
There's talk that Tobey Maguire could come back for Doctor Strange. There is, I don't know. There's been a lot. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Who comes back after so many years?
Oh, man. I mean, I guess a recent one that, the movie's not out yet, but like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Bill and Ted. That's the new example.
Bill and Ted trailer came out.
Jay and Silent Bob, technically.
Jay and Silent Bob, like that, you know. So, yeah. I mean, there's like a lot of them. Some of them that have like happened, I guess, and some of them that I wish to happen. I don't know. So, but yeah.
So this is where my top five comes from tonight. If you have your dream, what are your top five dream comeback castings? So this could be anyone who played a role however many years ago, and now they're bringing it back to, we just wanted to see what they were up to. you know. That's what I get from every bullshit producer. And I was just really curious to see where these characters are at 20 years later. No, you were curious about how much money they could still make you.
Yeah,
like that's it.
Circling back to our conversation.
Circling, there. It's all connected.
Yeah, man. This is an interesting one, dude. Because when I look at my list, few of them are like comedic actors. And the roles they reprise, I guess, are from like those kind of movies. So, I've got number five, Jim Carrey in Ace Ventura, dude.
Fuck. We have the same five, dude.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. That's wild. I mean,
we should never be surprised. Wild. I always feel like we think of like these days, but yeah. I don't know. It's funny. I don't know if it's like a subliminal thing that's been happening, but, I think they added like, the Ace Ventura series on Netflix just recently, or
they did.
It's there. So I was like, oh man, you know, like, and I know, you know, Jim Carrey, you know, he's still, you know, obviously, acting, and he's been in a whole bunch of different kind of roles over the years, some dramatic and whatnot. But I, weirdly enough, I always felt like that was his time to shine, and really, especially for the character of Ace Ventura and like being this, I mean, all the Jim Carrey kind of like aneurysms and like mannerisms and like all those things that encompass his comedy acting, like physical comedy acting. He just takes it to so many heights in those movies, and I would love to see him come back as Ace Ventura, and it'd be perfect. You could stick him in any other movie. I mean, you could totally write like another Ace Ventura movie right now.
Because it's structured as a spy, or not spy, it's as a mystery, right?
Like a mystery,
just take a Sherlock Holmes story or whatever and just make it wacky as all hell. You make it a living cartoon. You put him at the center of Ace Ventura can be any age. He doesn't have to be Jim Carrey in the 90s. He can be Jim Carrey now. Maybe a little toned down. He doesn't have, you know, and here's one thing I don't want to fucking see anymore. Our heroes learn that they have a son that they didn't know about for 18 years. Oh, cool.
Oh, man.
My hero that I've been looking up to my whole life is suddenly a deadbeat dad. What the fuck? I'm really over that. I'm really over that.
No, seriously. I think the... as far as bringing him back, you know, I think it would be... I think it's totally doable. And you're right. There's a lot of different kind of like genres that play into the Ace Ventura series. And I think it could totally work. You know, I'm not sure how, Jim Carrey personally is, how he feels about reprising that role. But I think it would be hilarious. And I think even for people like generations that didn't grow up with that, like Ace Ventura, and especially now with, you know, Netflix being able to put that stuff out for audiences to see.
Right.
I think it'd be very interesting to see him play that role again. So, Jim Carrey for
Ace Ventura. I love it. Literally. That's wild.
Because he's got a lot of other great comedic roles too, and especially during that time. But
yeah, I think that's the one that would make the most sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe it's the definitely. Mask,
but
it's had its time, that movie for sure.
Yeah, but
I could totally see it. Anyways, so that's my number five. Number four is an interesting one. I don't know if it would be a full movie with him, and I guess this is an ensemble cast, but I've got Will Ferrell down here.
Okay.
But it's for a role that it's not one of his most like highly recognized roles. You know, he's always been in like Anchorman, you know, you recognize him Step Brothers and whatnot. I would like to see Frank the Tank come back. And possibly the old, and I guess this is kind of a, if you can allow it, like some of the cast from old school come back.
Yes.
I want to see that. I want to see that. Frank the Tech was such a funny character. It's Will Ferrell obviously being just super funny and himself in some way or form. And I mean, it is tough because it's like old school, you know, it's its own movie, you know, it's like a singular movie. The Frank the Tank character was interesting because you kind of got glimpses of him and then he kind of like transformed into that character back again. So I thought that was the funny part about it too. Like seeing him be so like, you know, reserved, but also like, you knew like he was that party animal kind of guy
bubbling under the surface.
Exactly. So, so yeah, I just figured like it'll be funny to see him reprise that role, because he's known for a lot of different characters, and you know he's there's been multiple Anchorman, there's been two Anchorman movies, I think there's a lot of different roles he's played, but I don't know. I'm just interested to see that character. I thought he was hilarious, and yeah. And maybe that character could work, and maybe not necessarily like another sequel to Old School, but maybe it's like in that universe, or like, you know, I could imagine like a house party and like Frank the Tank comes back and does his thing or something. So I don't know. But yeah, Will Ferrell for number four. And let's see here. Okay. Number three, I've got Tobey Maguire as Peter Parker, Spider-Man.
Toby.
If they ever do this, which I do wish they just kind of keep it to the animated side of it, but if they ever do some sort of Spider-Verse, like live action, I'd be so down to see Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man again.
I think the fact that it has worked in animation means someday we will see it in live action.
In live action.
I think so. It made money. It made awards. Like, I think we'll see some form of it eventually.
We'll see something like that. And
Miles Morales will be the star of the next Spider-Man PS5 game.
That's right.
Like, dude. They're really pushing it, which great, you know. But I think they're setting up the general audience, because kids who grow up with this next video game, you know, are going to want to see a movie starring that character, right? So
I wish I had that meme of what's his face from Reading Rainbow. Was that the one where he has this?
Oh, LeVar Burton.
Yeah, there's a meme where he's like, he's like, yeah, and everyone uses that meme to be like, of course, like, like. Anyways, yeah, Tobey Maguire coming back as Peter Parker. I actually really enjoyed, you know, obviously his take on Spider-Man, and you know, that was kind of the Spider-Man live action movie that we grew up with. You know, it was the first kind Absolutely, of rendition yeah. of that. And I don't know, there was, if it was like into the Spider-Verse kind of world, maybe that would be kind of cool to see that interaction. And, you know, he was playing like a younger Peter Parker. So, you know, maybe that was interesting too. But yeah, I don't know. I watched the first Spider-Man movie the other day, and like, you know, it made me think like, I enjoyed him in this role. It holds up. He obviously doesn't look like a high schooler in the movie, but
no. He looks like he's our age, but at the same time, like, and the movie almost looks, I don't want to say cheap, but you can tell their movie sets, you can tell the practical effects, but it feels bigger in scope than anything Marvel has done. Even Endgame, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, this is your cranky aside for the moment. There you go.
Oh, that's cool, dude.
Cheers.
So Tobey Maguire for number three. Cheers. Let's see here. Okay, two. You might slap me on the wrist for this one, because
let's see.
His time. He had a lot of time in this role. Almost
Are
like
you gonna
13
go Wolverine
14 15, yes, Hugh Jackman. Fuck it, I want him to stay Wolverine, dude.
You know what, I'm with you on that. Yeah,
I can never picture anyone else, even if they put someone else that I really like. I just can't. It's like 14 15 years of that, like,
well, yeah,
you know,
I mean, you like, can't now until you see an image of the next actor playing him, then you're like, oh,
okay. I guess so, but you know, I mean, I know we're used to seeing, like, you know, I guess different Batmans, different James Bonds, you know, like that kind of stuff. And they do span, you know, I was watching a few James Bond movies the other day, and it's like they do span like, you know, almost like a decade per, you know, for each Bond or whatever. So, but I mean, I don't know, man. Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. Like,
yeah, you have to see different haircuts.
I can't picture anyone else, you know, it's that kind of thing where, you know, I guess the, especially with, like, I mean, it's hard to compare, because I mean, that guy's been in that role for so long and has done it so well and has committed, you know, 100% to it. So so there is that weird, I guess, the attachment to it, like the personal, like, you know, we've grown with this character throughout these movies. So it's like, that. But I mean, screw it, man. It's a dream team. I'm going to pick Wolverine because
fair, man. I like Hugh
Jackman. Yeah, he's definitely. Yeah. So that's my number two. And my number one is another comedic actor in some 90s movies. I've got Mike Myers, dude. I want him to come back, not as Austin Powers.
Yes.
I want him to come back as Wayne. Wayne Campbell, dude. For Wayne's World 3 or whatever it's going to be called.
I've wanted this for a long time, too. Yes.
I've been down to see that, man. Kind of similar to Bill and Ted's Bogus or whatever the next adventure is.
Face the Music.
I am kind of down to see that. Face the Music. I am kind of down to see that. And, you know, I think they can do, you know, at least come up with some sort of Wayne's World-esque, you know, trilogy movie or whatever. And I honestly think that's, you know, that's, I mean, it's one of my favorite characters from Mike Myers. You know, I actually over Austin Powers, you know, I think he, that character is, and especially in, I don't know, I feel like they can find a way to really kind of hone it in and really bring him back and bring Garth back. And, you know, we
and
had
they
that
can
little...
still play the same age. Like, they don't have to age the characters up and, like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I'd be down with that, dude.
Yeah.
I'd be super down with that. So, yeah. Yeah, Wayne Campbell. That's kinda...
What do you consider Mike Myers' masterpiece? Side question.
Man, I don't know, man. I mean, Wayne's World, like, the first Wayne's World was
It's so
awesome.
Good. It's
it was
so good.
I don't know. I mean, I know he's been in a few other, like, more dramatic roles recently.
But, I mean, I'm talking Mike Myers movies. What is, like, where he had creative control. He may not have been the director, but he had creative control. Like, what is his masterpiece?
That's tough, because I always go either the first Wayne's World or probably Austin Powers 2.
Yeah,
I thought that was my
good.
Favorite Austin Powers out of those three.
The rewatchability of The Spy Who Shagged Me is incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
I remember when we talked about it on the show, and then I ended up watching it, and I was like, "Hold, like this totally
it's
holds
so
up."
Good. It's so good.
So, yeah, I think that's you know that's and then honestly, like, you know, I, you know, there's, you know, I guess some movies should stay where they're at, or you know, I have my feelings about. You know, remaking like Back to the Future or all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it shouldn't be done. But I could see Mike Myers come back for another Wayne's World, you know, and if he had, you know, a hand in that as far as like writing or, you know, contributing to the movie in that way, I think that'd be super cool too. So that's my dream team at the moment. Stuff
that would
from
be so cool.
My childhood and. Some of them superhero movies, but I don't know.
It's a good list. It's a good list. I can tell you they've been talking about Austin Powers 4, but I've not heard anything about Wayne's World 3.
Oh, man. That makes me sad.
Me too. We don't need Austin Powers 4. You really wrapped the story up with Goldmember and recycled a lot of jokes that didn't need recycling. I like your list. It's a good list. All right. You did... Ace Ventura, that's the one, though. That's the one. I guess I'll put, just for the sake of keeping it fresh, I'll put The Gang from High Fidelity. I think it would be a pretty depressing movie. and I think we would find Rob in a very similar position that he was the first time around. With Laura having left him, and maybe he's two or three, you know, relationships past Laura at this point. Obviously, the record store, it could be either booming because people are doing records now, or it could be failing because of the digital age, right? You could go either way with that. I'd be curious, you know what I mean? Like, Rob definitely has at least one, if not two divorces under his belt at this point.
Oh, wow. You know what I mean? Years pass. Yeah.
As much as I love Laura and like their relationship and all that, well, I don't love it's it feels real, right? It doesn't feel Hollywood. That's what I like about it. And because it feels so real and not so Hollywood, I don't see the two of them lasting. Because he grows a little bit, he grows incrementally, but not. I don't think he has a lot more to go. He has a long way to go. And I'd like to see what Dick and Barry are up to. Why not? Number four, I'm gonna go the Brat Pack. The Breakfast Club. You could easily frame it around a high school reunion. This is a movie that I haven't heard any talk of ever being like remade. It probably will be at some point, but so far I haven't heard anything about that. And it's a movie that every generation discovers. When I was teaching freshmen in high school, they were like, oh yeah, Breakfast Club, it's on Netflix, I watch it. You know, like, it's a movie that is accessible. It's kind of edgy. But no one remembers it as edgy. So everyone's like, yeah, it's safe to watch. Go watch that. It's a great movie. So kids kind of discover it. And those characters are important, you know, and they're all still around. Like, I'd like to see. Yeah, I'd be curious, you know. Number three, Spike Lee, Mookie from Do the Right Thing.
Oh, OK. Yeah.
I think given everything. Spike Lee has always been just such a passionate filmmaker. He writes with lightning. You know what I mean? I would want to see what he has to say or what story he would want to tell in the world today. And I would want to see him revisit that character in that neighborhood. You've seen Do the Right Thing, right?
Yeah. Actually ready for a rewatch on that one for sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful film. It's a beautiful, heartbreaking movie. And I think, who is Mookie today? Right. Would he throw the trash can today? What's going on? You know what I mean? Like, obviously, you know, you need a young character to anchor the story. And what advice is he giving this character? What way does he go? Right? Is he, fight? Or is it, it's a lost cause? You know what I mean? After that much time, it could go either way. And I'd be curious to see, I don't know.
Nice.
But yeah. Interesting. That'd be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two. I was always mad this movie didn't get a sequel. Joaquin Phoenix is Johnny Cash. There's so much more story to tell. I remember me and Danny Rodriguez, we were pissing off one of our teachers on a retreat, Isola. And we were riding with him in a van to town to pick up whatever, I don't know. And me and him are just going on and on about Walk the Line. And, oh, dude, I want a sequel. Like, there could totally be a sequel. And he kept his mouth, but he was getting more pissed off at us, like, the more we talked. But he was keeping his mouth shut, you know. And at that, he finally, like, snapped and turned around. He's like, it doesn't warrant a sequel, okay? but I disagreed then and I disagree now. Walk the Line is ripe for a sequel. Johnny and June lived such an extraordinary life. And really, Walk the Line could have been such a wackier fucking movie if you know some of the stories about Johnny Cash. He contributes kicking drugs to a couple of instances, depending on which autobiography you read. One, he goes to jail, and the cop who's outside the jail cell says, you know, Mr. Cash, we're so disappointed in you. Me and my wife love you, and my son looks up to you. And he goes, and that's the moment I decided to quit drugs. And you're like, no, that didn't happen. And there's another one where he goes, yeah, I crawled inside a cave, and I was just going to wait to die. And then I felt like this voice calling me, and I thought it was God, and I crawled out of the cave, and there was my mom and June. And you're also like, did that? I don't know. There was the time that Johnny Cash was so high that he accidentally lit his camper on fire, and it started a national forest fire. And he's the only person in the history of our country, maybe the world, I don't know, to be sued for starting a national forest fire. And win. What? Like, he lost the suit. Like, he had to pay the fucking government money.
Whoa.
Especially because, like, there were endangered buzzards or something. There was the time after him and June got married where he went out to feed the animals on the ranch, and, like, a, was it a peacock? It was an ostrich. It was an ostrich. Sliced Johnny Cash from the belly. His belt buckle saved his life. He was rushed to the hospital. At this point, he was clean, but they gave him pain meds because his entire front end was split open, and he got addicted again. And he writes about how the night before he was supposed to be let out or discharged from the hospital, he was like, I had a plan. He opened up his stomach, his wound, and he took all these pills that they weren't going to let him take with him, and he was going to smuggle them out inside of himself.
What?
So he put the pills in there, and then he closed the wound back up. Well, what happened was that the pills dissolved into his system. So he's, like, high as a fucking kite, like, whoa, nearly ODing, because he has, whoa, like a month's supply of pills just in his system now. And he's just
what?
Like, yes. Yes.
That's an insane story. What?
Yes. Like, we need a sequel. We need that.
Yeah, and we need that.
And Joaquin could do it, man. And make him be Joker skinny this time.
Man. Yeah, you know? It seems like there's lot that, you know, they could fill in, you know, or at least go through, because, you know, that's a whole man's life.
Yeah.
I mean, I really enjoyed Joaquin Phoenix in that role. You know, we've talked about Walk the Line.
Yeah. The two of them are charming together. They have good chemistry.
Yeah, good chemistry with Reese Witherspoon and... You know, that'd be interesting too to see a movie, to see more into the Johnny Cash's life and his escapades, I would say. So,
you know, you've got the Highwaymen, his partnerships with Bob Dylan. Like, you can explore so much shit.
There's a lot of different moments they can really highlight in a movie like that. Interesting. I didn't expect that one actually from you, because
full of surprises.
There we go.
All right, number one, here we go. You ready for this?
Hit me with it, dude. What do you got?
I want to see Pierce Brosnan come back as 007, baby.
Dude, you know what's so crazy? I mentioned I've been watching the Pierce Brosnan era 007 movies, and literally right before, as I was working on my list, I was like, you know what, like, James Bond, there's different people that come back, and, you know, it would, I know this is our dream list, but I thought of him. It's so crazy you thought of him, dude. I was thinking about putting him on my list.
Yeah. dude, I would... those are the Bond movies we grew up with. I think he is a very good James Bond. He is kind of what I think of when I think of James Bond. And his movies had the fun of a James Bond movie that I want. Where the Daniel Craig has the character development and sometimes the story. If you could take that... those aspects and give them to Pierce Brosnan, because I think he could handle it. And I think he would make a really good aging Bond. Like, you know, Bond doesn't need to be, I don't know. I think it'd be interesting. I think it'd be cool. I'd really like to see it.
Yo, I rewatched Goldeneye, man. It was awesome.
And it's like the only like legitimately good Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is about, like, Tomorrow Never Dies is boring. World Is Not Enough is, I like it, but it's not good. Christmas Jones is the name of the Bond girl, and she's played by Denise Richards, and who I love, but I'm just saying. And then Die Another Day is just
all terrible. All sorts of mess. Yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
But.
And you know it was interesting watching Goldeneye again, dude, because it's like this was our, you know, the first Pierce Brosnan you know, James Bond film, and, you know, I guess sparking it for the, you know, that kind of generation of people, for the kind of the next generation of James Bond moviegoers. Yeah, it was interesting watching that, man. I was like, dang, this is like, and then of course, you know, we love the N64 game, GoldenEye. And I was like, oh my God, this is the scene. And like, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. Like all these, like you play the campaign and you know, yeah. But yeah.
You know what's really interesting about GoldenEye? They give him a blue car.
That's right.
A blue BMW. What? Why? Why? James Bond's car should always be silver.
Yeah. You're right about that.
He does get to drive the DB5 in the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah. It's cool.
When that woman is sent to evaluate him. And she goes, James, you're incorrigible.
Which, while rewatching some of those scenes, I know they even mention it a few times, like, you know, because there's obviously the history of James Bond, especially talking to females in the movies. There's a great scene. I don't know if it's in the... I think it is in World Is Not Enough or Gold. I think it is in GoldenEye. This World's Not Enough. I think it's World's Not Enough.
When Judy Dench tells him off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a moment where M just goes, well, you know, she just like puts James Bond in her place. And I feel like that was kind of like their statement on some of like
I believe she calls him a sexist, misogynistic dinosaur.
Yes.
A relic from the Cold War era.
Yeah.
It's such a good line. Yeah. I knew that's where you're going. I was so excited when you started talking about it. I was like, I know where this motherfucker is.
Yeah, I was like, oh man, like someone's finally called him out on this. And yeah, Judi Dench is amazing in those series of films. It was really nice to see like her introduction into that. So
dude, I think that's why I like Skyfall so much.
Yeah, it is very, like, that was a very personal story to her, but,
yeah.
I really liked Pierce Brosnan. That was a good call, man. Like,
yeah.
I would love to see him maybe as an older Bond. That'd be really interesting, too, so.
You know? You know?
Yeah. You know?
You know?
Dude. Interesting list. Now I'm, like, thinking of, like, movies that I hope will come out in the future.
Hell yeah.
But hopefully they don't get butchered, too, as well, so. Which could be a possibility.
It's very possible.
It's possible. So, Joey, I'm going to segue into our next top five.
Please.
Obviously, watching a lot of shows. And I don't know. I really, really enjoy watching the opening show credits and the kind of opening scenes of a show and the title kind of title scenes. So, Joey, what are your top five opening sequence scenes or credit scenes or I don't know what do you call them? Title cards?
Title sequences. So I like this list. Top five TV title sequences. Say that.
TV title sequences.
TV title sequences. I don't know. Anyway. Number five, I have a lot of, just forewarning, I have a lot of cartoons on this list.
Oh, that's cool. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Number five, I'm gonna go Doug. It's got that wonderful, just chilling. And it's Doug. He's against a white background, and there's just this line, like someone's drawn a line. It's like he's in a page of his notebook or his journal, and he takes that line and he kind of wrangles all his friends. And when he sees Patty Mayonnaise, it becomes a heart balloon, and he floats up, you know, to the sky, and it's very inventive. It's something you could only do in animation, and it tells you everything you know need to know about the character and kind of his mindset. Mm-hmm. Doug, I think, was always much more of like a cerebral kind of a cartoon, right? It's, when you think about it, it's just a kid whose imagination gets the better of him, and as someone whose mind is always doing that, the older I get, I go, shit, you know, I really do relate to Doug funny, you know what I mean? Like, I think about him more and more as I get older, because I'm like, that's what it is, you know. But wonderful opening and the soundtrack, you know, it's him and Porkchop together.
Oh, I know. Gosh, so, I might have to revisit that show. It's been years since I've seen that. It's such a wonderful
show. Wonderful show.
Years.
Number four. I was going to go Happy Days, but I think I'm going to go Fresh Prince.
Ooh, good call.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It's very, like...
It's catchy, and it tells you quite a, it tells you a good backstory. Yeah.
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 And it's something that you never really want to skip through, right? In Westfield, like, yes, I want to listen to that. Yes, I want to sing along or rap along to that or whatever the fuck. And, like, yes, I want to see Will Smith do this with his head a few times. You know what I mean? Like, like, yes, please. so, yeah, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Number three, it's my favorite TV show of all time. Batman, the animated series. Yeah, it's got the Shirley Walker by way of Danny Elfman score. And you see the crooks, and then and you see the Batmobile, and the cops are chasing the cops, and somehow they're on the roof all of a sudden, and then there's Batman, and he just takes them out, and you know everything you need to know about the character in the span of about 50 seconds. It's so cool. And it's beautifully animated and wonderfully scored. Number two. Gigolos.
I'm trying to remember the opening and how that went.
I'm gonna walk you through the opening right now. So Gigolos is a Showtime After Dark series. It is a reality series about five gigolos living in Las Vegas. And they're so ridiculous. They are exactly the type of people that you suspect them to be. They are douchebags and assholes and self-obsessed and just, it's amazing. It is the most amazing experience. And it's wonderful because you can put on any episode and you'll know who these guys are within the first 45 seconds because it starts out. I'm going to walk you. I think I've memorized the Gigolos intro. You ready for this?
Hit it.
You hear Nick Hawk going, what's he say? Shit, hold on. Now I'm on the spot. It's not easy being a gigolo. Or no, it's Jimmy. He's saying, you know, it's tough work being a gigolo or something like that. And then I think it cuts to Nick Hawk. I'm very proud to be called the gigolo. I try to break a sweat 6 days a week. There's nobody more competitive than me. Intercut with these guys driving around in the Las Vegas lights, cut to them like having sex. You know what I mean? And then it cuts to Brace, the older gentleman of the group. And he just kind of, well, you know, the Brace philosophy is really to be good to people. You know, I've had so many women in my life, it's just a blur. And then he's walking up with this woman. He's like, well, I'm just going to enjoy this. And then it cuts to Jimmy. And Jimmy is like, he's this creepy guy who looks like the Woody doll come to life. And he just goes, I'm the guy who likes to eat dessert first. And he does that with his tongue. And he's like, you know, I'm very adventurous. I'm willing to try anything once. And then it goes to Steven. He goes, I'm just a regular guy. Looking for love like everybody else. This is me. You can take it or leave it. And then it goes to Vin Armani, kind of the normal one of the group. He's like, I really love women. Learning about them, learning what makes them tick. I would consider myself like a real feminist. And then it gets to Nick Hawk in his car going, it's Vegas, baby. And that's it. Then you're in it. They all cheers their glasses on a rooftop. And then you're in whatever this episode has in store for you. It is always like, what?
Yeah.
What? Nick Hawk is trying to launch a rap career, and then he records a country song. It is.
There's so many.
Oh.
Please send that to me.
Yeah. Do you have Showtime?
I don't, actually. I don't.
Yeah. I can't send it to you.
That's cool.
But, yeah, so Gigolos is my number two. I love that, like, no one knows about this show because it's on Showtime After Dark, and it contains some porny type elements, I guess. But really, you know, you don't have to watch it for that stuff. You can fast forward through that stuff. You want to watch them just interacting with each other and talking about their day. It's incredible. Number one, I'm going to go Bob's Burgers.
Ooh, wow. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Bob's Burgers. I think this is the most successful TV title sequence there is. You know, I think it's, what, 15 seconds long? And you see everyone kind of drops into frame one at a time, right? So it's the burgers, and then it's Bob, then it's Linda, and then it's each of the kids in the order that they were born. And you see the places around them change hands a couple times, and, like, people walk by, and you get a sense of their neighborhood. In 15 seconds, it communicates everything you need to know about this TV show, that this is a family, this is their world. There's puns on either side of them, so you know it's that kind of humor. Like, it's such a great, it's so great, and it's inventive, and it's clever in the way that it kind of does those pun jokes different every single time, and sometimes it's different people who will walk by. It's charming. It's really charming. I love it. I adore Bob's Burgers.
Man, I gotta catch up. I don't think I watched that last season, so
I haven't watched several seasons ago, but, like, I watched the first, like, three or four, and I just, it's such a wonderful TV show.
It's a great, yeah, great show.
Yeah.
That's it's very interesting when you, like, most of your lists, and maybe that's why we pick these shows with the, or as our favorites as far as, like, the title sequences, is being able to communicate to the audience, like, in this title sequence, you know, this is what the show's about, or at least an idea of where, you know, immediately, like, you're introduced to that aspect of the show. And I think that's why a lot of these title sequences are very, you know, important too, I feel, to really set up kind of where you're at in the, as far as the feel of the show and then the characters. So that was an interesting thing I realized with you, what, when you were talking about it, it's just like, that's what they're for, you know, and, but also I think they're able to do it. So
it's the most important aspect. I think that's the entire job of a title sequence. You know, Stan Lee used to say every comic book is someone's first comic book. Well, every episode of a TV show is someone's first time, right? And they're not going to get the complex backstories of this person was in love with that one and blah, you know, like, but they can get a sense of who these characters are, how they fit in their world together, and the title sequence, when done well, can accomplish that. It's, you know, my favorite, like, superhero movie title sequence of all time. Because remember, like, back in the day, like, X-Men was just, you were going through DNA strands for, like, 8 minutes. Yeah. Like, can we get to the freaking movie already? And it wasn't until Spider-Man 2, and they brought in Alex Ross, and he painted scenes from the first movie. It was so beautifully done. But it told you silently, all visual, it brought you through the story of the first movie. And you were kind of able to go, okay, I'm caught up, let's jump in. You know, that's what I'm looking for. So I'm curious to see your list and, you know, hear your top five.
It's funny. I didn't put too many animated shows, but I do have an animated show on mine. I put Hey Arnold, because similar to Bob's Burgers.
It was so hard to leave off, dude. Yes.
Similar to Bob's Burgers, you kind of get an idea for the obviously Arnold and his friends in the neighborhood. And then, of course, the sense of the place they're at and where everything's at. And, you know, it introduces a lot of different characters within that title sequence alone. So I think that's what I enjoy about that opening sequence. And I guess a lot, you know, it seems like a lot of animated shows, especially with, like, from that era, I felt like some of the older stuff, they did that a lot, where it's like, you know, you're really trying to encompass, you know, kind of the environment and, like, where this is taking place, and really, like, you know, having that be addressed up front. But, you know, Hey Arnold's such a, like, that's another show I have to rewatch. Like, I just haven't watched it in years, but I remember, it's so crazy to, like, it's, like, embedded in your memory as far as, like, how that title sequence goes, like, playing it over in my head. And the same, you know, for some of the shows you mentioned too, man. So, Hey Arnold, man. And, you know, the, the hey Arnold, the kind of callback thing, and
move it, football head.
Yeah, da, move da, it, da, da, da. Yeah, it's all these like, and so you, and then yeah, you get to introduce some of the characters, and you know, some of the dialogue they say, you know, kind of gives you an idea of like how they're going to act, you know, in the show. So, yeah, it's on my list of like cartoons that I want to revisit from my childhood kind of stuff. So
it holds up. It holds up really well.
That's why I'm excited to watch it, because and man, animated shows in back in that time, especially for it was on Nickelodeon, right? I mean, I know it's a little separate, but the inclusiveness and diversity in some of the cartoons in Nickelodeon, like I remember seeing a post about people mentioning how cartoons, yeah, back in the 90s and especially on Nickelodeon, were, you know, very diverse and included a lot of different, you know, ethnicities and whatnot. And so it was interesting to kind of relay that back to what stuff that's been going on recently, and just like, wow, you know, I'm glad I got to see a show like that too. Yeah, that's very inclusive, even for a cartoon. So
we were lucky in that regard. You know, yeah. We didn't grow up with hate.
I feel you, dude. So yeah, Hey Arnold. I've got number four. I've got Game of Thrones. I know we don't speak of this show as much on our podcast these days, but I gotta say, every time that title sequence came up, I watched it all the fucking time. It got me so amped. I know we have a sour taste on the last season, but it got me so amped for the show. Each season, they would change the layout of the map and kind of show you areas you're going to visit throughout the season. So I thought that was very interesting. And it had this kind of, I don't know, like puzzle piece kind of mechanical machine kind of look to it that represented all the different kingdoms. In a way, it did introduce you to like the areas and the different kingdoms, and you know, kind of even the design of some of the, you know, some of the aspects of what makes that kingdom or that family, you know, very very specific to them. Like the, you know, there's like design aspects of that too, and the music too as well. Man, got me pumped every single time to watch the episode. Aside from the last season, but yeah, Game of Thrones for number four. Let's see. Let's see. Number four. I moved a few, so. Okay, I'm going to go number three. Dexter, which is a Showtime one. Long story short, Dexter is a forensics officer living in Miami. But he's also a serial killer that kills other serial killers.
By night.
By night. So the show is how it opens is a perfect way to kind of showcase this man who's like living a double life in a way. And this kind of puts on this face. But the show opens with him pretty much doing his morning routine. And the camera angles and stuff are so, I guess, very focused and close. Like focused on specific parts of, you know, him cooking his breakfast. So he's like cutting up, you know, or he's mixing his eggs and cutting things. And, but the way they shoot it and the way they make it so in close and hyper real, they find a good way to make it seem like he's like killing. And so the actions of this normal routine of doing, you know, your morning thing, and, you know, he's making some coffee and doing these things, but the way he, you know, they focus in on him grinding the coffee, and it's like he's grinding some, you know, body or something, or the way he's flossing his teeth, and they have this very, you know, intense moment where he's like tightening the floss, and, you know, and the way it's cut, you know, and that's, you know, very good editing, you know, as far as that, and being able to showcase that. So it's a very, I don't know if it's like smart, but like, it's a very good way to like, to show something that seems very normal, a normal routine in someone's day, but also the underlying thought of like, this guy's a killer. So, you know, these things are also things that come to mind. So I thought that was a very, smart way of really kind of addressing, like, you know, this person who is like kind of living a double life. And it's, and again, it's watchable every time, you know, it makes me cringe every time I see it. So, so Dexter,
love it. Number,
Dexter was number three, right? I'm going to go two. Man, number two, I'm going to go Westworld. Actually really, you know, I have my opinions on the latest season, but the Westworld title sequence, one, the music's awesome in it.
It's good.
It really nails kind of like, you know, it really nails like the identity of the show, and it sets up that kind of mood for the show. But I really like the sequence. One, each season, of course, they change it. It's a little different every season, but the kind of, especially with the show being about hosts or these kind of like human robots, who are kind of enslaved by the human race in a way. There's a lot of great sequences where it's, you know, these kind of animals and these like human human features. And, there's like, again, this kind of, godlike force that's kind of animating these characters and stuff. So I think that's like kind of what was interesting is, and probably my favorite part about the, opening sequence was when you see the close up on the piano, and one of the hosts or the robots is playing the piano. It's like the skeleton too. It's not like a human skeleton. And then the person's hands like move away, and then the piano's playing, and it's just a perfect like representation of like, of like these robots not having that kind of sense of control, and you know they have a conscience in some way or form, and you know this kind of like. And also being programmed, you know, like, you know, are the actions that are happening to the characters, especially the robotic ones in the show, you know, are they predetermined or are they pre-programmed or are they actually making decisions? So there's a lot of like underlying themes that are like hitting, with some of the imagery you're seeing in the title sequence. And I always like that part of it. So, Westworld.
Wonderful.
And then my number one, which has become, I've talked about this show like many times on this podcast, but after I'm almost done with the third season, it just dropped the title sequence for Dark. I really, it's becoming one of my, it's my favorite show, dude. It's my favorite show.
Your favorite show.
Number one favorite show of all time.
Dark. And did you say it's German?
It's a Netflix produced German show, so it's I think it's one of Netflix's first German produced shows, so it's fully
in German. Jesus, your favorite show of all time is in German.
I did watch it twice, once with the dub on it, American dub on it, and actually it was distracting a little bit at first, but the voiced actors behind it, they did a really good job, and I felt like they They definitely killed it. So, but yeah, I fucking love this show, man. It's really, you know, it's got all the things I want in it: time travel, science fiction,
hell yeah,
family dramas and shit. And wonderful. Yeah, and the title sequence, it's kind of weird because it is a little bit more shrouded in mystery when you watch it. But it's great. They do the effect where I don't remember what the name is, but it's the it's like the butterfly test or the Rorschach test or whatever it's called. What do you call it?
Rorschach
test. So the title sequence for each season, they take scenes from specific parts of the show, and then they do the Rorschach kind of double image sequence on there, and it creates these very beautiful images and. Also kind of hints at a few things that might happen in the series and kind of thematic things that are in there. And it, I don't know, every time it just like gets me, it's really, interesting to watch and look at. And, you know, the song they use for it too, as well. I posted something today about it, 'cause I was like, I can't get over this, the show right now. And, yeah, it really, And especially, I guess, if you do watch the show and if you finish this third and final season, it makes it weirdly, they kind of, it makes more sense when you watch the title sequence. And, you know, I'm not saying you have to go through the whole show to kind of get it, but it makes adds more, layers. It adds a layer to it for sure. Right. So, yeah, Dark, title opening sequence for Dim Point.
That's how us jazz people like to do the poets thing. Beatniks. Us beatniks,
y'all.
Word. Well, very good. Very good, my friend. That's a good list. Hey, Arnold, Game of Thrones, Dexter, Westworld, Doc.
Doc.
Jonathan, do you have anything you'd like to share with our dear, sweet, lovely, imaginary audience this week?
Not much. I think we talked off air about this, but I did get a chance to watch the last Black Man in San last Black Man in San Francisco. Is that, I'm trying to get the
that's
the title right. So we've talked about it on the show a little bit, and Joey recommended it to me. So I watched
great
it.
Movie.
I really enjoyed that film, and it is kind of funny to hear, you know, talks about in our high school Reardon in there and. SI and stuff like that, but it was a really nice story, and it's a small, you know, there's a small kind of love letter to SF in a way there, but also I don't know how to really touch on it. I mean, there's a lot of parts that I liked about it and stuff that I really took away from it, and you know, there's a theme of, you know, obviously kind of you know, this thing, theme of like letting go and, you know, kind of being able to, you know, have this kind of fantasy of having this, you know, this one thing, you know, there's a lot of different things it hits on, and I really yeah. enjoyed it. And I think, you know, our listeners, if they watch it, they'll enjoy it too. So
I fully believe that as well. It's beautiful. It's beautifully shot film.
Oh yeah. The way they highlight a lot of like San Francisco and the buildings and houses in San Francisco, it really made me miss, you know, San Francisco and appreciate the city even more. So,
and it doesn't feel like the San Francisco you usually see in a Hollywood production. It feels a little like the city, you know. It has that flavor, that personality to it. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So that's kind of my share. I watched a film, and I have a lot more films on my kind of docket to get through, but that was one I really enjoyed. So, and then
I like it.
For the last time, check out Dark too, because the third season, the final season dropped, and I have one episode left. So I've been kind of savoring this last episode. And I am getting kind of like the Game of Thrones vibe, not Game of Thrones vibes, but I am kind of sad that it's over. So, we'll have to see how it ends and, you know, check it out. So,
wonderful.
Joey, do you have anything to share this week, man? What do you got?
Two quick things. I'm late to the game on this, literally, but Call of Duty World War II, I'm having a lot of fun. I feel like I'm in college again. It's my favorite Call of Duty game since Black Ops. So it's a blast. I like it.
It's a blast.
It was the free game of the month on PS Plus last month. So our buddies, St. Francis and the Wolf, released their debut album. You posted about this earlier. It's wonderful. It's so good. I recognize so many of the songs from their live show and was treated to a bunch that I hadn't heard before. So please go download, buy this album, rate it 5 stars, or if it's out of 10, rate it 10. Don't rate it 5 if it's out of 10. If it's out of 5, rate it 5. It's a wonderful album. I think Super Toy is the track that I'm just kind of like vibing with right now.
Yeah, I finally got into the album.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's really cool to see them release music, and you know, we've talked about them on the show, and I said in my post, it's like I can't wait to play another show with these guys, you know, with Blind.
We're supposed to play June 5th.
Yeah, so
that did not happen. That's
not
okay.
Happen.
It will happen.
We'll hope. Yeah, hopefully in the future, sometime soon. So, but yeah, dude. Anything else? Anything else you want like to share, Joey?
Oh, just for those watching at home, if you are, I always take a picture of. I write down all our lists every week, and then I take a picture just so I, if I'm in the other room, I don't have to come back for my notebook. It's, or if I'm out in the world, I'm like, oh man, I gotta. So,
smart lad.
Yeah, but that's it. That's it. I've missed doing the show with you. I've missed our dear, lovely, sweet, imaginary audience. I just hope that we can continue to push forward and not forget, you know, that we all got to be instruments of change. I hate to put it that way, but I mean, that's what we all have to be, right? We got to be like St. Francis. Yeah, there we are. There we are. Go out and make the world a better place, whether it be through your art or whatever the fuck. That's my shit. Soapbox. Jonathan, one last question before we go. I'm almost forgetting. Where can we find more of your work on the internet this week, my friend?
You guys find me on Instagram at Sean Day Music, and on my website SeanDayMusic.net.
Net, y'all.
Check me out. Joey, where can we find you on the internet?
You can check me out on Twitter at Joey Prati and on my website JoeyPratiScripts.com. You can check out the show at Top 5 Pod, that's TOPFIVE5POD, on Instagram, on Twitter, at Facebook, or at gmail.com, and on Facebook at Top 5 Podcast. We're on Apple Music, Google Play, and SoundCloud, so please give us a like, give us a listen, give us a follow, give us your love, and we will give you
so much more hugs in return.
We're giving you hugs.
Socialite distance hugs in return.
Until next week, I'm Joey Prati.
And I'm Sean Day.
Thanks for listening. Yeah. Okay.